afternoon, President Donald Trump makes his first visit to Illinois since taking office. He's headed to a steel mill in Granite City that brought more than 500 workers back on the job because of his trade decisions.
We've been asking for this for a long time, and that was the best way for us to get back to work, the best way for us to be sustainable. And we're just asking for fair trade. And President Trump was able to accommodate for that.
We'll hear from the Steelworkers Union, a local farmer, and a protester as the Metro East area prepares for the president's visit. Plus, if you're low on cash and have a car, it's pretty easy to get a car title loan, but the interest rates on those aren't regulated. And for Danville resident Paul Gillespie, that meant having to pay double what he originally borrowed.
I was like, holy cow, I can't believe I was this stupid.
And as we're all settling in to enjoy summer, that means it's time to start thinking about the fall, especially football. We'll check in with Cheryl Ray Stout to hear how the Bears are doing at training camp. It's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Coming up this hour, it would seem like a loan that charges more than 300% interest wouldn't be legal. But there are tens of thousands of people in Illinois using car title loans. We're going to hear one Danville man's story and learn what, if anything, lawmakers are doing to regulate these types of loans. And are you ready for some football? We're going to be checking in with how the Chicago Bears are doing. Cheryl Ray Stout joins us from training camp in Bourbonnais. Up first today, though, President Trump visits Illinois for the first time since taking office a year and a half ago. This morning, we're going to hear from a few different perspectives in southwestern Illinois. We'll be speaking with a leader of the local steelworkers union that's been hiring hundreds of workers since the Trump administration's decisions on tariffs on imported steel. We'll also speak with a farmer in Jersey County who's been affected by those tariffs other countries are now retaliating against. And we'll end with someone who's helping organize protests today. Before we dive into that, we wanted to start with Joe Bustos. He's a reporter with the Belleville News Democrat, where he joins us from. Hi, Joe. Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time. I know it's a busy day ahead for you and other local reporters.
Thanks, Nyla. How's it going?
Good. So I wonder how it's going for you. I understand that among the visits that President Trump is going to be doing here, he started the day in Iowa. He's going to be heading to the steel mill in Granite City today. Do we know who he's going to be meeting with and what he's specifically going to be doing?
He'll be traveling with Congressman Mike Bost, as well as Congressman Rodney Davis, and Congressman John Shinkus will also be present during the visit. But he'll be speaking with some steelworkers and some community members from Granite City, and also people who have benefited from Granite City Steel firing back up. So he'll include a short tour of part of the steel mill, and he'll also be talking about his economic policies, which included tariffs on foreign steel. U.S. Steel has said that's part of the reason why they were able to fire up Granite City again.
Right. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking with one of the union officials from the local steelworkers union. What's the mood like, Joe? Are folks excited about the visit?
Well, I think there is excitement from people in the city. There was one person who was decorating his front yard fence, writing Trump with some plastic cups on his fence. People were going to be welcoming him. The Chamber of Commerce has asked people to welcome him. But there's also going to be demonstrators who are going to be demonstrating against President Trump's policies. We saw that last week when Vice President Pence was in town. People were protesting against Vice President Pence when he was in the St. Louis area. And Vice President Pence also came to the area to do a fundraiser for Congressman Mike Bost.
Our governor, Bruce Rauner, was with the vice president. He's not going to be around for President Trump today. Mm-hmm. He's already said that. Are other state officials we expecting to see there?
There are two people who have said that they're going to be there. Sam McCann, who's part of the Conservative Party running for governor, he says he's going to be in Granite City. His office was trying to see if they could get into the event, but he'll definitely be outside. And Christian Mitchell, the party head of the Illinois Democratic Party, said he'll be outside the plant protesting.
One quick question for you, Joe. President Trump lost Illinois by 16 points in the last election, but what can you tell us about how he performed in the Metro East area where he's visiting? I'm thinking of not just Granite City, but Belleville, East St. Louis, Edwardsville.
Well, I think in southern Illinois, President Trump did well. He won the district that Mike Bost is in, and that's considered a toss-up district. He won that by 16 or 17 points, I believe. He did very well in southern Illinois. It's Trump country. So for Bost, and I keep mentioning this because it is a good trip for Congressman Bost to be seen with the president down here. And having these jobs come back is good for Congressman Bost. And it's one of those things that the president could tout.
That's Belleville News Democrat reporter Joe Bustos. Joe, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. I appreciate it.
No problem.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about President Trump's visit to Granite City, just across the border from St. Louis. It's his first time coming to Illinois since he took office. He's scheduled this afternoon to visit a steel mill that has benefited from tariffs on foreign imports he announced earlier this year. Back then, we spoke with the president of the local steelworkers union in Granite City, Dan Simmons. He told us how much it meant for the workers and families in town for all of those folks to be getting back to work. Jason Fernandez is vice president of that same union. It's United Steelworkers Local 1899. He was actually in Champaign yesterday, and I had a chance to sit down with him. Hey, Jason, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I wanted to just ask you a little bit about the union. You all are at United States Steel. Can you tell us a little bit about the workers you represent and the kind of work that they do?
We had several hundred workers just come back off a two-year long-term layoff. What we do out there is we make steel. We pretty much just take pig iron. We take it to the basic oxygen furnace and create slabs of steel in our casters. The slabs of steel goes to a hot roll finishing product where we roll them into coils. And some of those coils are shipped out to customers. Other coils are taken to our cold roll processing units. And that's where they get turned into galvanized steel and what you may know as soda cans and other tin cans, car doors, car hoods, some thinner types of steel.
So there's about 1,200 workers at the facility right now?
As of right now, yes.
And how many of those folks came back to work this year after the president's movements on tariffs?
Roughly 500, give or take 100 or 200. We had to endure some retirements. We have some contract language that we invoked that allowed our members to obtain severances. And then, of course, some resignations as well, where some of the members just resigned their position and went on to other work.
What do you think it means to the community, to Granite City, to have these folks back to work?
It's extremely important. In Granite City, there is such a rich history of that steel mill. Granite City specifically, it's important because 1899 has a significance. And with local 1899 is when the actual steel mill as a granite ware facility from the Niederinghaus brothers began. Then it turned into a steel mill as the years went on. So obviously with the importance of the economies in Granite City and then going eastward and westward into the St. Louis metro area economy, it's been extremely important for a lot of the counties that are surrounding the St. Louis area and the Granite City area for the steel mill as well.
And what do you think it means? I wonder how you feel personally about having President Trump, this being the first place in Illinois that he's going to be visiting since he took office.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to attend. Obviously, I'm in Champaign, so I deal with it. I'm okay with that. As far as me not being able to be there, I'd like to be there to help represent the membership as a whole, and just to at least say, you know, thank you for affirming what we've been fighting for. For me on a personal level, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, we have membership that has been fighting for decades prior to me even becoming a member of the union, just to make all of these administrations prior to President Trump aware of the injury that we had to take on from subsidized steel. And that's what we were asking for, to impose tariffs. We've been asking for this for a long time, and that was the best way for us to get back to work, the best way for us to be sustainable. And we're just asking for fair trade. And President Trump was able to accommodate for that.
Jason, what's the average, I don't wonder for your unit, what the average hourly wage looks like?
$25, $27 per hour.
That's a pretty good
yes.
hourly wage. And you mentioned to me before we were on air, hiring continues
yes.
at United States Steel?
Yes, on a weekly basis. We're looking at 20 to 30 new hires on a weekly basis.
So, Jason, you mentioned President Trump's actions in this tariffs, which have now, there's been a whole series of actions that have now sort of culminated in this trade war between the U.S. and a couple of other countries. We've talked to a lot of farmers. We're going to talk to a farmer later on in the show about how much that instability has really hurt them. I wonder what you say to farmers who have been hurt by retaliatory tariffs that have helped steelworkers.
That's been a topic of conversation within our union in how to have those conversations. I think right now, if I were to have to sit down and talk to a farmer while speaking to you, I would feel safe to say that I don't know much about the farming industry. In the same token, he may not know much about the steel industry. And so that requires that conversation between the steel industry and the farming industry and agriculture to have that understanding of what we need to fight for. And how it may impact the farming industry and vice versa. And I know there are legislators that I don't know if it's purposeful. I can't presume that at all. But it's always if the steel industry is going to receive this benefit, then the farming industry is going to suffer and then vice versa.
Or maybe not farmers, but just other manufacturers or other people, because this is just sort of the global economy and how it's working.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's a great
point.
So
I wonder what you would say. So you and steel workers have won out, but there are others in the American economy who have lost.
Yeah.
And what would you say to those folks?
Well, it certainly wasn't our intent to direct that towards the farming industry. And I think, admittedly, we don't know. Speaking as a representative on behalf of the steel industry, just because I've worked in it for now a decade, this is just the narrow vision that rightfully we all have. We want to sustain and preserve what we're working for. And the agricultural industry is going to do the exact same thing. They're going to focus on the agricultural industry and hope that within good faith and no ill will intent that it's going to harm any other industries while doing so. I don't know if that's the give and take. I don't know. I fear that it may be in hindsight to all of these actions that are coming out of it. But I think it's fair to ask that we may need to actually sit down with each other and have that conversation to see if this is the actions that we're going to need moving forward within the steel industry. And if it's going to continue hurting the agricultural industry, that we may also need to sit down and try to figure out what where we can meet in the middle.
That said, you have lots of folks at United States Steel who are really excited about President Trump coming to visit this afternoon. Is it safe to say that all of those folks have his support and votes going forward?
No.
No.
Well, there are. It's just the nature of where we're at right now within the politics of the United States. It's polarized, and it's polarized everywhere. A good portion of our membership is going to adamantly support Trump, and a good portion of our membership will not support Trump. I'm aware that there's going to be protests that's going to be down there. I have no inclination of whether or not our membership's going to participate in those protests, but I'm certain that we're going to have just as much of our membership that's going to be out there willing and ready to even shake his hand if that's going to be allowed. That's how excited some of our membership is. So, you know, that's the truth. That's the reality that it's polarized, and we just have to be aware as union leadership that we allow our membership to actually sit down and have that conversation with each other as we sit in our lunchrooms with each other. And if we have to have a discussion of politics, that we at least be aware we may not see eye to eye when it comes to politics, but we're going to have to work together, and we're going to have to make sure that we continue to fight for sustainability in our industry and to continue to have a job for the next 30 years.
So it sounds like as a union leader, you are also not going to publicly say how you feel personally about the president.
No, I don't. And I am. I'll admit it. I'll purposely play the diplomacy card here only because I do have to stick up for the membership. In my personal politics, I will sit down and talk with my membership on a personal level. When I work with them 40 hours a week, on three separate shifts, you know, I mean, we go through the grind of working shift work. We go through the grind of working in a steel mill. So I actually have to keep that relationship with them. I want to, not that I have to, but I want to. And there have been disagreements, you know, with myself and others on politics, and we just move on. You brush it off and you move on and make sure that we get our work done while we're there. And if we go out and, you know, have a beer or something later on, then that's what we do too, you know, and make sure that it's just as civil as possible.
Jason Fernandez is vice president of United Steelworkers Local 1899. Lots of his colleagues and coworkers will obviously be in attendance this afternoon to welcome President Trump to Granite City. Jason, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you.
I'd like to turn now to a farmer in southwestern Illinois. As we were just talking about, tariffs on foreign steel have helped workers at that steel mill at the U.S. Steel facility in Granite City. But we also know what's happened after that in the form of retaliatory tariffs by other countries that have hurt our farmers. Ken Schaefer farms hundreds of acres of soybean, corn, and winter wheat in Jersey County. That's just north of St. Louis, about an hour north of Granite City, where the president will be. And he's on the line with us from there now. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Good morning, Niall. It's very interesting to listen to the conversation on the side of the steel workers. It's as he says, well, he's not aware of the farming issues. I'm not totally aware of the steel industry issues as well. So it was very interesting to hear that perspective.
Do you have any thoughts on what Jason was saying?
I know it appears sometimes that there are winners and losers. I think as a country, though, we will all come out ahead. I think there was a lot of unfairness in the trade agreements that were put together previous. I think our president is just trying to get this balance of trade worked out when you're basically at a $500 million deficit in the trade balance, that you can see that things are not equal.
We have to take a break in about a minute, but I just wanted to ask you very quickly how the instability of the past year has affected your operations.
It's quite a bit. It's impacted quite a bit. We are, our farming operation is mostly a cash sales position. We don't do a lot of forward pricing, even though we do have crop insurance. But when we usually move a majority of our grain in the June and July market time, that's when the processors are looking to carry them over to the new crop. And we were hit hard this year. Soybean prices down $2 a bushel, and corn prices down 65 cents a bushel since the 1st of June. And it has impacted us. And
Ken, I'm going to stop you for just a moment there, because we do need to take a break. But if you can just stick around with me and to our listeners, just after the short break, we'll continue this conversation with Ken Schaefer about his work as a farmer in Jersey County. You're listening to The 21st. Listening to The 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in. My guest is Ken Schaefer. As President Trump makes his first visit to Illinois, he's headed to southern Illinois this afternoon, going to be visiting United States Steel facility in Granite City. We've been talking about both with steel workers who've gone back to work, how that's been a great thing for them. We're now talking to farmer Ken Schaefer about what the retaliatory effect of those tariffs have had on his farm in Jersey County. Ken, I wanted to ask you, you were just talking before the break about how June and July was a really important time for you. You farm hundreds of acres of soybeans. You were getting that soy to market. And we were talking about the instability of everything. It sounds like what you were saying, though, was you believe overall that you think the president is headed in the right direction here with his decisions that he's made and trying to create a better trade situation for the U.S. overall. Am I right in understanding that?
Oh, I totally agree. Of course, there's any time there's uncertainty about a new move, that there becomes uncertainty in the markets. But I am confident that things will work out. United States farmers are some of the most efficient in the world, and we have the most productive farmland in the world, too. A lot of countries have been dependent on buying commodities from the United States, whether it be corn, soybeans, wheat, or even livestock products. I know the hog industry has been built up largely with the export market in tow and thinking of that in terms of for the swine producers. So I'm totally confident that these countries just cannot turn to somewhere else to buy their grain, that the uncertainty right now is there's some caution in the market.
And in terms of you personally, do you feel like this has been a tough year for you financially because of the president's decisions, or do you feel like it doesn't, you feel like that's in the end not going to make a difference when we look at the long term of this?
Well, it certainly will make a difference, especially as we've seen our input prices keep going up and our weather challenges alone. It's hard to predict what your cost of production will be because you actually do not know until harvest what the actual yields will be. So you kind of have to work backwards through and plan ahead for the next year. Already we'll be in another month, so we'll be contacted by seed companies wanting to for early orders of seed corn and soybeans for next year. And it's like, we don't know how this year is going to turn out. But in all the industries tied together, if farmers are hurting, it hurts our suppliers because there might be cutbacks in fertilizer or the chemicals and machinery dealers are being hurt a little bit too because planned purchases of machinery have to be put on hold for now. And for us, it's a wait-and-see program.
And do you feel like, I wonder if your crop insurance will cover losses from this trade war. Is that something that might help as well this year?
Unfortunately, the crop insurance is a good tool for farmers. The most we can insure is 85%. There's different levels of insurance a person can purchase, but it's set. The price that's determined by crop insurance is based on a point set in time, and then this trade war that we're experiencing right now, this happened outside of the insurance program, so we weren't, it kind of caught us off guard. We didn't plan ahead for this. And I know the welfare or the package the president has addressed here in the last week about $12 billion aid to farmers. To me, it's upsetting to see that some headlines say it's a welfare program for farmers. No, it's a program to help us to get through this tough time until the markets can start reacting again the way they should be.
That said, as President Trump visits Illinois for the first time today since he took office, if you had a chance to speak with him, what would you want him to know about agriculture, particularly in southwestern Illinois?
I would definitely let him know that we're concerned about the trade talks. We're hopeful that things will come together, but we want him to realize that this is not a program that we can drag on for 4 or 5 years, that, you know, we're planning right now for next year, and those plans will be impacted by what we feel the markets will bear.
That's Ken Schaefer. He farms in Jersey County, soy, corn, winter wheat. I know this is a busy time for you with the corn, Ken. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about President Trump's visit to Granite City this afternoon. We've been hearing different perspectives from the southwestern Illinois Metro East area. As I said earlier in the hour, we spoke with one of the leaders of the local steel union, just speaking with Ken Schaefer, farmer in Jersey County. Let's end with Sheila Voss. She's vice president of Action Metro East. She's helping organize a protest against President Trump in Granite City. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sheila, before we get to what you're planning to do, can you tell us more about yourself and why you are protesting? I ask because you live in Edwardsville, just about half an hour from St. Louis. Earlier in the hour, we heard Belleville News Democrat reporter Joe Bustos say this part of Illinois is Trump country. And I wonder, have you always been involved with progressive activism, or is this something that happened recently when Donald Trump was elected?
So more recently, and I myself am active today in this event, representing a whole group and groups of folks. So Action Metro East, Action Illinois, Confluence Progressives, and several indivisible groups. These are groups made up of local area citizens, everyday citizens that live here, work here, pay taxes here, raise their families here, who really have mobilized, to be perfectly honest, since the 2016 election. So I represent here today a group of people that stand in opposition to this particular president and his administration's policies.
And particularly, what are you opposing and protesting today?
Okay, so there's multiple issues, but we are really there today, literally, to stand in opposition to Donald Trump and his policies overall that hurt so many families, working people, women, minorities, the most marginalized among us. If there's one word that summarizes our reason today, our main issue with this president that we want to get across, corruption, pure and simple. The level of corruption, the lack of transparency, the attacks on the free press are intolerable. It's a direct threat to our democracy. We're not there, of course we are not there today in opposition to the reopening of Granite City Steelworks or the return of jobs. Of course not. In fact, we stand in enthusiastic, loud support of Jason, all of the union workers there, as well as unions everywhere that benefit the workplace. I will note, it is disturbing that local elected officials have used derogatory language about this event today, characterizing us as quote-unquote agitators or threatening, when in fact, as elected leaders, they should really be proud of us. We're practicing an exceptionally American civic act today, our right to assemble.
And what's the plan, Sheila? Yeah. What are you planning to do?
Our plan is we want to focus on three main messages. So, like I said, while our concerns are many, we want to focus on specific priorities. We want to put the focus on what we want, not just what we don't want. So, affordable, quality health care for all, strong unions that benefit the workforce and local economies, and perhaps the most important and cross-cutting, the importance of citizen-driven democracy.
And where in Granite City are you going to be, Sheila?
So we're going to be right there in a local park, in Civic Park, so right there, joined by several folks, again, like I said, who are living here in various different communities across the Metro East.
That's Sheila Voss, Vice President of Action Metro East, telling us a little bit more about plans for a protest she's helped organize against President Trump's visit to Granite City this afternoon. Sheila, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Of course, you can stay tuned to your local NPR station throughout the day for the latest on President Trump's visit. Right now, imagine taking out a loan where you'd have to pay a 300% interest rate. That sounds like it should be illegal, right? Actually, in Illinois, though, it is not. According to the Consumer Federation of America, Illinois is one of just 16 states that have triple-digit interest rates on car title loans. That's the type of loan you can take out on your car title. It's something usually only done by those who really don't have any other alternative. And last year, tens of thousands of people in Illinois took out these types of loans. WBEZ Chicago's Natalie Moore has been reporting on this issue. She's on the line with us now from their Southside Bureau. Hi, Natalie.
Hey, Nyla.
And Natalie is also how we met our next guest, Paul Gillespie from Dansville, who was featured in Natalie's story. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Paul, I wanted to start off with you, and you spoke with Natalie for the story she reported for WBEZ. You told her about how you needed to get a car title loan a few years ago. Can you share with us what was going on in your life around that time and why you needed a loan immediately?
Sure. I mean, I was going through a lot, really. I mean, I lost my wife to cancer.
I'm sorry.
I was left with two teenage daughters to raise, and on top of everything else, I was trying to work, hold down a full-time job, and trying to learn how to pay bills and stuff. I'd never paid bills. My wife took care of everything. You know, I brought home paychecks. She was a stay-at-home mom. And after my wife had passed away, well, it was the week after, actually, we buried Karen on Tuesday, and our landlady called us on the following Saturday, and told us that we needed to move because she was putting the house on the market that we'd been renting for 5 years. So here I am. You know, I just buried my wife. I'm already in debt with a $10,000 funeral. I'm trying to figure things out. Well, long story short, we wound up having to move. I found a place and stuff, and we got all moved in. Well, I mean, I was working pretty much 10-hour days, 6 days a week to try to hold everything up and pay for an unexpected funeral and all that stuff. And I got in the hole, you know. And
yeah. Right. And how did you hear about a car title loan? How did you know that was a possibility?
I'd seen him. I don't even remember actually where I'd seen it at. But Danville, there's five or six of those places in Danville. I mean, you drive down just about any street, you can see them. You know, they're on the main street and stuff like that. And I thought, well, you know what? To get all these bills paid and stuff, I'll see, you know, what it's all about. And I went in and sat down with the guy, and next thing you know, I'm walking out of there with a handful of cash, you know. Well, it was a check, but I took it to my bank, and there it was. And then when you start paying it back and stuff, you see the interest get paid off, but not the principal. And I'm like, wait a minute.
So that's when you realize. So you borrowed $2,000. How much did you end up having to pay back from that initial loan?
It was like $4,000 that I paid back.
So double the amount.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Natalie, as Paul is sharing this story, how common is this for folks who are in his situation with a car title loan, paying back an interest, as he said, basically double, so it was 200%?
It's pretty common. Car title loans are marketed to people who can't get a traditional loan. They don't have great credit. They need cash right away. Like Paul said, you go in and, you know, 30, 45 minutes later, you're walking out with a check.
And Paul, did you realize what the interest rates were when you signed up for this loan?
Well, I kind of did, but then again, I kind of didn't. I'm a very simple person, very simple-minded person, and I had a lot going on in my life at that time. I mean, I had a heart attack working myself, trying to raise these kids and stuff, you know? I mean, and this was just 3 months after my wife passed away.
Right, and then because of that heart attack, you were also out of work, right, Paul? Paul, I want to ask you something, and I want to stop you because you said you were a simple person. You said, Natalie, you had this in his story. Paul said this to you in his story, and you said it's not that Paul was simple. Paul, I think in your story you said to Natalie, I was stupid about this. And Natalie, you had a line that stuck out because you said, Paul isn't stupid. He was desperate. And I wonder if you can share a little bit more about the demographics of folks who were in borrowing situations when they're using car title loans, Natalie.
I don't have demographics on race, gender, or age. None of that is collected. We do know that car title loan shops are all over the state. This isn't just an urban black and brown low-income issue, although we see that the establishments tend to be clustered there. But as Paul just said, what, there are five in Danville? That's not a big town. So we do know that this hits different demographics, but it hits low-income people the most. So the information that has been gathered from the state is that 72% of title loan consumers earn $30,000 or less a year, and only 3% own more than $75,000. So that gives a picture, and $30,000 isn't even, you know, really low income, and that's a pretty high bar for, we don't know what the family size is, but we also know that people are paying pretty high interest rates, and that this is a tool or, you know, a loan product that has grown. So the lowest, and this was the first year, there were 54,000 transactions. Last year, there were 68,000.
Wow. And that's in Illinois, Natalie.
Yeah. That's Illinois.
We have to take a break. Hold on. If I can just stop you for a minute there, Natalie and Paul, we have to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about these car title loans. Paul, I'm curious your opinion on the regulation of this and how you think this should be regulated. We're going to get into some of that after the break with Natalie Moore and Paul Gillespie. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Illinois is one of just 16 states that have triple-digit interest rates on car title loans. That's a type of loan you can take out on your car title. As we've been hearing from WBEZ Chicago's Natalie Moore, it's something that's used by people, particularly on the low end of the income scale, when they don't have any other alternatives. We've been hearing from Paul Gillespie in Danville about his loan he took out. He borrowed $2,000, had to pay back $4,000 when he calculated the interest level. Natalie, what are the consequences for people who can't pay back these loans?
The worst case scenario would be, well, in addition, if they're paying all these fees, is that they could get their car repossessed. So the difference between, I think the closest cousin to a car title loan would be a payday lender. And a payday lender, you know, is basically a cash advance. The difference here is that you are handing your car title over, and that is the collateral. So at some point, if you are not paying back, or you have, you know, stopped paying, you know, whatever terms that this car title loan company has decided, you can get your car repossessed.
And who regulates this, Natalie, the interest rates on this? Because when we have regular loans, even payday loans to a certain extent, have certain regulations within the state of Illinois. Do car title loans?
It's not regulated.
Oh, it's not
so
payday.
They can set the loan. It's not regulated. The agency that does regulate this type of lending is the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, but they do not regulate interest rates.
Why is that?
That's a very good question that I don't have the answer to. They just don't.
And are there lawmakers who are trying to change this?
Yes. So there is a Fair Lending Act, which would set a cap at 36%, and currently that cap is 360%.
The cap is 360% interest rate?
Yes.
Paul, as we've been hearing and as Natalie's been saying, all of this right now is legal. And I wonder if you could sit down with one of our state lawmakers who, as Natalie was just explaining, have the authority to change this so interest rates aren't as high as 360%. What would you tell them?
Well, you know, I mean, it was a move of desperation that I did, you know. And like I said, I'm a pretty simple-minded person. I didn't really think it out or none of that. I just needed the cash. And, you know, it's one of those things, just because it looks good don't mean it's a good thing. You know, it's that easy. And, I mean, I'm sitting here going through some paperwork from that right now, and I found a customer appreciation reward card where I get 25% off first month's finance charges. You know, they doctor this thing up to make it sound oh so good, which, like I said, it is if you're desperate. But, and, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of hard to explain, I guess. I mean, it's totally different if you go to a bank and get a loan, you know, because you pretty much low interest rates. But this is ridiculous.
Right. You know? And as you said, Polly, they made it sound also like it was, first of all, you were desperate, and they made it sound like it was a reasonable thing. Natalie, do you get a sense from lawmakers that there is any effort to do some work on this Fair Interest Lending Act?
The impression that I got is that people still need to be educated on this. There is some understandings of, you know, pawn shops, payday lending. But car title is something that hasn't been around in the state that long, less than 10 years. And some lawmakers, like Democratic lawmakers, have said that no Republicans have signed on. And so this might be seen as a so-called Democratic black and brown inner city, you know, insert other stereotype adjective there. And you know, we're hearing from Paul, who is a white male who is from Danville. This, you know, there's certainly these issues do cut across racial and state lines. And I think what was imparted to me is that there has to be more storytelling and more understanding that this is a statewide issue and that it doesn't have to be a partisan issue. Advocates have told me that this has been a bipartisan issue around regulation in other states, and Illinois is just not there yet.
And as we said, last year, 68,000, some 68,537 title loans taken out in Illinois. Thanks to WBEZ Chicago's Natalie Moore for sharing her reporting. We'll tweet out links to Natalie's story. And Paul, thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Yes, no problem. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Well, I just got back from my own vacation to the UK, where I had a little bit of a sports holiday, experiencing Wimbledon and World Cup fever. But there's plenty going on right here back at home. And our favorite sports sage, Cheryl Ray Stout, is on the line to offer her opinions and predictions and information about the Illinois sports world. Hi, Cheryl. How are you doing?
Good morning. How you doing, Nyla?
I'm great. I have to tell you, Wimbledon was a life-changing sporting experience that I will never, that was wonderful.
That's a great event to go to. I mean, I used to cover tennis all the time. In fact, I've talked to Billie Jean King a few times, and there's something about tennis and those players. They're just so real. You know, I mean, they're powerful players. I mean, Serena Williams is my favorite to watch right now. She's unbelievable.
She's unbelievable. I was sad I didn't get to see Kevin Anderson play. I was there earlier in the week before our University of Illinois graduate, Wimbledon record breaking. But let's talk about football, because you're actually in Bourbonnais right now at Bears training camp. First of all, Cheryl, why is Bears training camp so far outside of the city?
Well, they've done this in other places like Platteville, Wisconsin, right near Indiana. What they do is they go to a college campus, and because you have 90 players on your roster, and so you want them to be in a contained area. And so they have the classrooms availability. They have the fields already here. And what they do is it allows the fans to come see them work out. So it's a win-win. It's a big win for the colleges because they get money from the Bears to be able to do this. It's a big win for the community because it draws fans from Chicago area to come down to Bourbonnais, and the business around here boom from it.
Mm-hmm. And before we get to actually what's going on in practice, I wanted to ask you about the ongoing conversation about NFL protests. Last week, particularly the Miami Dolphins were in the headlines for how they said they were going to fine players who were protesting during the national anthem. They kind of rolled that back. But what's the latest? What are the Bears saying about this? What's the conversation that continues to dominate this offseason?
Well, the Bears are not saying anything. Sam Otto is their union rep. They're saying that there's supposed to be negotiations going behind the scenes between the union and, of course, the owners. But you have these individual owners that are popping up, like Jerry Jones in Dallas, saying that he won't allow them to stay in the locker room to protest. He won't allow them to kneel. And then you have the president tweeting things. So it's constantly being stirred. And the interesting thing, Nyla, is that it actually had calmed down before President Trump made it a big deal again. And so the players are going to be pushing back. That's my feeling. I don't know for a fact. But I think because they're being pushed so hard, some things could happen. Now, there are owners that are going to go along with their players, in the New York Jets and New York Giants. So there are some owners that are breaking ranks with the other owners about this.
And saying they're going to support player protests.
Yes, yes.
In the meantime, for those who are watching and those who are not boycotting because of the protests, how are the Bears looking?
Well, it's a big question mark. I mean, they're early in camp because they are playing the Hall of Fame game next Thursday. And so they get an extra week of camp. They have a brand new coach in Matt Nagy. They have several new players, and Mitchell Trubisky is in his second year. So, we're not seeing, like, real game acts or anything like that. But talking to the players afterwards, like we just talked to Akeem Hicks and Trey Burton. Trey Burton is a new player who was with the Eagles that won the Super Bowl last year. When you talk to them, you get an idea from them. And what they say is, like, they say that, well, the defense is ahead right now because it's pretty much been together. They retain the defensive coordinator. And the offense has to make steps and strides slowly. It's not going to be great from the beginning. So next Thursday when they play the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, against Baltimore, that's going to be a really nice measuring stick as to how far they are from having a couple weeks of practices.
Let's switch to baseball and maybe a more positive story, because the Cubs have the best record in the National League right now, right? Cheryl, what does it say to have that record at this point in the season?
Well, you never want to have any slippage, you know, and so they've been maintaining. They've been playing well, but some unfortunate news today. Chris Bryant has been put back on the disabled list with a shoulder.
Oh boy.
That's been plaguing him, and that could be a problem because an injury like that just doesn't go away, Nyla. That's something that may have to be monitored throughout the season. He definitely, his home run hitting is not the same. With that said, you also have Javi Baez. He was slid into at second base just 2 days ago. His knee, he kind of hobbled a little bit. And Brandon Morrow, their closer, is supposed to come off the DL on Saturday. He's not going to because he's not ready to come back.
Mm.
With that said, you do have players on this roster right now that really have been playing well. You got Jason Hayward is having a terrific season offensively and defensively. John Lester is having a great year. They've had some good starts from their starters. Their bullpen has been the key to them being where they're at as far as pitching goes. But offensively, they're the number one team for RBIs. They're the number one team for on base percentage. They're number one, you know, so they're offensively with the rest of the players on the team, like Alberto Moro, Wilson Contreras, and, you know, they are really maintaining. So Joe Maddon's fortunate that he has a solid roster that he can rely on.
Let's talk about the Sox and the Cards, both not so great records compared, especially. Let's start with the Sox. Are there any interesting moves you might see that might happen ahead of Tuesday's the trading deadline, right?
Tuesday's the trading deadline. I think we're going to possibly see a couple of their pitchers maybe traded. James Shields, unfortunately, got bombed last night. He looked like he could be someone that could be traded. But their closer, Joaquim Soria, he's probably going to get traded because he's been very, very good. And a lot of teams are looking right now. Most teams are looking for a bullpen relief, and so he'd be a perfect pitcher for that. And if the Cubs were smart, they would grab him too because he'd be really good for an eighth-inning pitcher.
Hmm. And Cardinals, Cheryl, you had a chance to see the Cardinals last weekend?
Yeah. Ooh. You know what?
That didn't sound good, Cheryl.
You know, I want to say one thing about the White Sox. They watch for Eloy Jimenez. He's really ripping up the ball in Triple A. I think he's going to be up early in either August or September. He's really, really good. As for the Cardinals, Matt Carpenter put on a show last week, and it was really fun to watch. I mean, you have to tip your cap, but even Joe Maddon tipped his cap to Matt Carpenter the way he was exploding on the ball. The Cardinals have very good starting pitching. Their bullpen is terrible. We saw over the series they had with the Reds and also with the Cubs. The other thing that's really troublesome to watch them, their defense, especially their infield defense, is really god-awful. I mean, they throw the ball around and they can't catch it. I'm used to seeing the Cardinal team with good fundamentals. This team does not have it. They do have a new manager in place because they fired Matheny at the All-Star break. I don't know if that's going to matter at this point.
Oh, boy. Well, that doesn't sound like it's going to be a good season for Cardinals fans.
I don't think so.
Right.
I know they've got some players that should be coming back, but I was flabbergasted because they played 5 games here in Chicago. So, that's when you really get to see a team every day like that for, you know, and I was just surprised that fundamentally they weren't good. And that's just not the staple of a St. Louis Cardinals team.
All right. Well, that's WBEZ's sports contributor Cheryl Reistout giving us at least the basics of what's going on in Illinois sports for baseball and football. Cheryl, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I love being with you too, Nyla.
That's all the time we have for today. By the way, if you have the NPR One app, you can download that wherever you get your smartphone apps. It's a good way to find past shows. It's pretty easy to download, and then you set your home station so you can get your home station news. And if you search for the 21st to follow us, you can easily listen to past shows that way. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. If you follow us on Twitter, our handle is 21stshow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about when we're not on air. You can follow us for the latest Illinois news, including today. We'll be tweeting out how the president's visit to Illinois is going. On our Facebook page, if you search for the 21st to like us, you can also comment on what we're working on. All those links, if you want to send us a voicemail, leave or an email or follow us at social media, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. were produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Tyler Pandilio is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening.